The following podcast is brought to you by the Communication and Media Studies Department at Dominican University of California. Welcome to Cinema by the Campfire, where I reminisce and analyze the films I believe have really influenced the world of cinema. I'm your host, Odyssey, and it's my job to take you on that journey. Hope you enjoy this episode. Welcome back to another episode of Cinema by the Campfire. I'm your host, Odyssey, and today we have another special guest, that being a good friend of mine. And for as long as I have known him, he's very opinionated about cinema. So I thought it'd be perfect to bring him on the podcast. He's been listening since episode one, so welcome if you want to say hello to the audience.
Hello. I am very happy to be here. I have indeed been listening since episode one. Love it here.
So, animated movies have been pretty prominent throughout my podcast, and that's because they were a big part of my life. You mentioned to me that you love animation. Why do you like that genre of film?
I would say I really like that genre film due to I really grew up with that part of cinema. More specifically, when I came here from the Philippines, so I'm an immigrant. In the Philippines, we didn't really have live action, so Saturday mornings were just like a bunch of animated cartoons, and my dad and I would just watch a lot of like movies, animated movies. So when I came here from the Philippines, it was more of that, except it was like a large variety of other like films, like Studio Ghibli, and like Saturday mornings had Sailor Moon and like Dragon Ball Z. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
So that's why like it's a big part of my life, because it's always been there. You know, it's always gonna be there. Not only that, but like a vivid memory that I had is, do you know those like Pixar shorts?
Yeah.
One time my dad came back from work and he had this like disc, and it was just filled with those Pixar shorts, and it's a core memory. And yeah, that's why I love animated films.
As do I. So some say that animation is for kids, and sometimes it can be, but recently we have seen a lot of movies with stories that deal with a lot of problems. What do you think of Disney's recent trend of showcasing generational trauma? As you mentioned, you are an immigrant of...
My opinion is, well, I think people who believe that, you know, animated films are for children, I think they need to grow up, because it's definitely not just for children. Not only that, but what I think of the whole generational trauma from not only Turning Red but from Encanto, I think it's beautiful, because it shows that movies don't really need like a big evil villain to defeat, and how trauma can be so deep rooted, especially like in Encanto and in Turning Red. Especially in Turning Red, we saw how the pressure from Mei Mei's mom like affected her growing up, and it affected her everyday decisions. And it's beautiful seeing that on screen, because I feel that pressure even to this day from like my from my family. You know, it's pretty good stuff.
Yeah, Turning Red deals a lot with mental health and the impact parents can have on their kid. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, like I said, like before, there's this one scene where Mei Mei wants to hang out with her friends after school, but an immediate flashback in her head is her mom like telling her that she can't go, because like she has to help out with the temple. And then there's a deleted scene where they the mom and Mei Mei, they do this like holiday like photo shoot, and then the mom's like, "What are we, Mei Mei? We are perfect." So it's seeing all that pressure on like little Mei Mei, it's and you know, I relate to that. It's, you know, it not gonna lie, like got me emotional, because it's these like immigrant kids and like the old generation putting immense pressure on their offspring to, you know, succeed and to be perfect. But in reality, we can't be perfect, you know. that's what I really think of that.
What do you think made Disney want to change their formula from the typical princess movies?
I think the criticism changed when... did you see Wreck-It Ralph 2?
Of course, of course.
Yeah, you know that scene where, like, all the princesses...
Oh, yeah.
I feel like that's them really poking fun at, like, their old, like, formula, because they've been doing princess movies for a really long time. And, like, each time, like, there was, like, a difference, but not a huge difference. Like, there's a vast, like, contrast of, like, princesses who were saved by men and, like, the princesses who, like, worked hard and did it themselves. You know, like, you have, like, Cinderella and, like, Snow White compared to, like, Tiana and Mulan. And there's only, like, a handful of Tiana and Mulans. And what I like that Disney is, like, switching it up is, like, these new movies are showcasing that, you know, you don't really need anyone or another man to save you. Another part that I really like is how like new Disney films, they don't really have a love interest to come out of like their movies compared to like the older films where they always had a prince. And I think that's nice, you know, like not every happy ending needs to include like a lover, you know, or a significant other. Like you can just be proud of like your own achievement, like in Moana, you know? Moana didn't have a prince or princess, or in her case, a tribesman, something like that. But yeah, like they didn't need a wedding to really like have that like bow on their like big happy ending. So that's I think it's beautiful. I think it's really nice.
I was getting sick of that genre of music from Disney.
Yeah, and plus like it gets. You know, it's pretty tired, you know? Like, who wants to watch the same, like, Cinderella film over and over again?
Do you think those who can't relate to the problem scene in Encanto and Turning Red would stray away from watching the movie?
No, definitely not. I think there are other themes that, like, kids who don't have, like, generational trauma to bounce off of, like, those scenes where the mom would tell, like, the mom was like super controlling over the daughter, and how she was like, oh, your friends are bad influences, you can't make friends, and like you're too young to make like big decisions. I feel like that's like a theme that a lot of people can really relate to, you know? Like what do you think?
Yeah, I can definitely relate to that as an Asian American. I feel like a lot of other people can also relate, but It is something a lot the general audience doesn't have to look towards.
Yeah, it's not like a film that like people who have generational trauma can enjoy for sure. It's something that everyone else can enjoy, you know, for sure.
Also the fact that people are able to see characters that look like them, not even with just animated movies. This decade, we've seen an increase in seeing Asian characters. What do you think about Hollywood's current state with having people of color on the big screen?
Well, to keep it short, I love it. It's awesome. If you go on YouTube and you compare like the Oscars from like the 90s and like, you know, you can see like the crowds in all the movies, majority of them are white. And they had like some black and like Hispanic and Asian actors, but a majority of them are white. Still, even to this day, a majority of them are still white. But we're doing a better job in representation in Hollywood. And a lot of people are saying how that's not really a good thing, but I think it's beautiful because growing up, like I didn't have much of like Filipinos to look up to in cinema. Like the only thing I can really think of is, well, if you don't count TFC. But did you watch the Brandy Cinderella growing up?
I have not, but I know of it.
Yeah. He was Filipino. And I remember, like, as a kid, like, seeing, like, oh, wow, Filipinos can, you know, they can be princes, you know? That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Like, yeah, not only that, but there's a huge, like, inclusion on, like, different sexualities, like bisexuality, asexuality, and queerness in general. And it's important for us to see it, but we also have to factor in the fact that kids growing up seeing that, like, how would that make them feel? And it's a beautiful thing.
Along with race representation, sexuality has also been a common theme that has been seen in media nowadays. What is an example of good representation and bad representation?
That is an awesome question, first of all. One piece of good representation is something that came out recently. It's called Heartstopper. And the reason why it's such good representation is because it's just queer people being happy. And that's the thing. It's like, it's beautiful nowadays because gay people have always been, you know, a thing. They've always been, you know, they've always been here. And then now, like, film and cinema, Hollywood is, you know, we need to, like, represent these guys. And more time over time, there's more gay representation, which I love. But the thing is with gay representation, like, current, it makes their lives as, like, miserable. Paints them as, like, very sad. And there's a trope in, like, TV shows and movies. Have you heard this? It's called Bury Your Gays. So it's basically, so a film will have a gay character and for like the representation points, but then they'll kill him off.
Oh.
Or like they'll have the character, they'll say that the character is like gay or like queer, and then they will provide no evidence whatsoever to do that. So an example of that is Star Wars. Before Han Solo, the Han Solo film came out, articles upon articles were saying that like Lando Calrissian is pansexual, but in the movie, there is no evidence towards like how that is like, you know, a thing. So, and when Toy Story 4 came out, they were like, Woody is bisexual. And then I'm like, in the movie, there was no evidence towards Woody being bisexual. So it was, that's bad queer representation. Another example is, do you ever see Love, Simon?
I've watched it.
See, Love, Simon is a good movie, but my gripes with that film is the fact that he gets his happiness at the end. You know, it's like, it's all like a big mystery, and that's what I hate. But what makes Heartstopper, it's on Netflix, what makes it good is like from the beginning, it's not like a happy thing. Like, of course there are sad parts, you know, naturally to like any show, but through the start and through the end, the queer characters are just happy. You know, there's no like death, there's no like bad stuff happening in them. They're just kids who happen to be queer, and it's amazing. You know, and you should watch it. Honestly, it's pretty cute.
I'll give it a watch. But going back to animation, how has it improved from, say, like the 90s?
Dude, have you seen Toy Story? Like the original compared to Toy Story 4? It is huge. That is a huge difference. Like Toy Story, the original one, they look like plastic toys, which is good from like that era. But like if you watch it now, you're like, wow, I really ate that up as a kid. Like that's crazy. And like A Bug's Life, the animation has gone like a long, long way from the 90s. It's pretty funny. You know, they're pretty timeless, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty timeless. Like you can watch like Lady and the Tramp and like Cinderella, and like you can recognize that it's bad animation, but
the story's there,
it'll always be there. And like not only that, but you can sit down and be like, wow, like for this time they really like broke like you know molds doing this. Mm-hmm. And you can like it's beautiful to look back on because wow, we've come this far, you know.
Yeah. What are some of your favorite animated movies?
Your episode one talked about it. Spirited Away is honestly my favorite.
What are your opinions of Spirited Away?
It's a master class in animated film. My particular like favorite scenes, you know, like the scenes where like Chihiro is just like looking at the landscape. There's no like not a lot of action going on. It tells a story, you know, like her looking at the spa and like all that stuff, like her just standing there taking all in like the scenery, like it tells like a story, you know, where like not a lot of like animated films like can say that, I want to say, because Spirited Away just does it so like effortlessly. And I love the scene, my favorite part of it, like Spirited Away, is when she's riding on the dragon's back. And like the music that's playing and like
beautiful.
And like the colors on the screen, it's it's amazing, honestly. It's pretty good stuff.
Here in America, we're now just now seeing animated movies dealing with all these problems, but Japan has been using the medium to do so for a while now. How has animation in America versus Eastern animation differ?
I would say writing in Japan is like has always been better. You know what I mean? Their films are awesome. Like you know, Battle Royale.
Yeah.
Battle Royale is what inspired The Hunger Games. And like everyone's like, when they make like a Hunger Games reference, like, oh, that's so Hunger Games, but they should really be saying Battle Royale. What makes like Eastern like animation like better, it's the writing, you know, like animated films, My Neighbor Totoro, Spirited Away, they have better writing, better cinematography. Oh, anime is a big difference. Yes. Anime, of course, who could forget anime? Like, we, like, the West wants to be the East, you know, yeah. Like, they want to be them in, like, you know, filmmaking and, like, cinema, but, you know.
The blueprint.
Yeah, exactly. Like, they are the blueprint, and we are simply following them. Yeah. They set the bar. They are setting the bar.
Yeah. Animation in the Eastern setting has always been geared not just towards kids, but adults.
Oh yeah, yeah. For sure.
But that'll conclude today. I want to say thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Of course. Happy to be here.
I hope you and my guests have enjoyed the episode today. It's time to put out the campfire. I was your host, Odyssey. Thank you so much for listening.